This is Gabriel Wrench with your Cross-Politic Daily News Brief for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. 2020. Before we get into the news brief, we are hosting our first annual Fight Laugh Feast Conference in Nashville, October 1st through the 3rd. Step out of the boring, benign Christian conference circuit and step into the rowdy Christian world of engaging culture with your faith, standing firmly on God's word. Most conferences will lull your faith to sleep and teach you to be nice. All the while, our culture needs a gospel that packs a punch that is full of fighting, laughing, and feasting. So please join us this October 1st through the 3rd as we build a rowdy Christian culture for God's glory and our good. Go to www.fightlaughfeast.com to sign up. Voodoo Modeling. Neil Ferguson. If you remember Neil Ferguson, he's the professor of mathematical biology at Imperial College in London. The one who, in all his omniscience, created the initial coronavirus model that predicted up to 2 million people could be killed due to the COVID pandemic. Well, it turns out that this was not the first time he cried wolf. According to The Spectator, here are 4 instances of voodoo modeling gone wrong at the fingertips of Neil Ferguson. In 2005, Ferguson said that up to 200 million people could be killed from the bird flu. He told The Guardian that around 40 million people died in 1918 Spanish flu outbreak. There are 6 times more people on the planet now, so you could scale it up to around 200 million people probably. In the end, only 282 people died worldwide from the disease between 2003 and 2009. In 2009, number 2, Ferguson and his Imperial team predicted that the swine flu had a case fatality rate of 0.3% to 1.5%. His most likely estimate was that the mortality rate was 0.4%. A government estimate based on Ferguson's advice said that a reasonable worst-case scenario was that the disease would lead to 65,000 UK deaths. In the end, the swine flu killed 457 people in the UK and had a death rate of just 0.026% in those infected. Number 3. In 2001, the Imperial team produced modeling on foot and mouth disease that suggests that animals in neighboring farms should be culled, even if there was no evidence of infection. This influenced government policy and led to the total culling of more than 6 million cattle, sheep, and pigs, with the cost to the UK economy estimated about 10 billion euros. It has been claimed by experts such as Michael Thursfield, professor of veterinary epidemiology at Edinburgh University, that Ferguson's modeling on foot and mouth was severely flawed and made a serious error by ignoring the species composition of farms and the fact that disease spreads faster between different species. Number 4. In 2002, Ferguson predicted that between 50 and 50,000 people, that's quite the range there, would likely die from exposure to BSE, also known as mad cow disease. He also predicted that the number could rise to 150,000 if there was a sheep epidemic as well. In the UK, there have only been 177 deaths from mad cow disease. And yet, we continue to listen to this kind of modeling coming out of Imperial College. What is going on with education? States and schools across the nation are working on strategies for students to go back to school in the fall. While most states and schools seem to be planning on opening up in-person scenarios, Colorado's governor estimates that up to 20% of parents will want to keep their kids at home. That's still pretty striking to me. California's governor, who continues to thrive in ambiguity and a supposed genuine concern for citizens' health, said in regards to schools opening up, quote, "I think some schools will not be. Many schools will be. There's nuance, but we are moving forward in hope and expectation that we can start that school year very strategically and methodically, again, based upon the health as a prime frame of reference in terms of those decisions." Oh my goodness, Governor Newsom's comments churn my stomach. First, he said nuance, and I'm telling you now, no Christian should be using that term for decades, at least for this decade. We need to put a moratorium on that term because currently nuance is for cowards. Secondly, he is going to base opening up California on a supposed concern for your health? Forget abortions, forget marijuana, forget the rampant porn industry in California. Governor Newsom cares about your health. Be leery of politicians who say they care about your health and are willing to enact totalitarian regulations and laws in the name of your health. In continuing with thinking about education, according to my friend Robert Borton's, also full disclosure, Classical Conversations is one of our amazing corporate sponsors, he notes that scientific studies and unscientific reports have started to come in. First, an EdChoice study was published which found 52% of parents had a more favorable view of homeschooling as a result of their Insta homeschooling experiences from the coronavirus shutdown. In response to that study, a non-scientific study followed by Reason that showed nearly 15% of those from public or private schools were planning on homeschooling this fall. That's pretty amazing, including private schools. Now, those who follow Reason are probably less, you know, they're less in the mainstream than your average American, and so more likely to homeschool, even if only 4% of those children are in government-run schools decide to homeschool this fall. The number of homeschoolers will effectively double overnight. That is quite astounding. I am really curious to see what registration and what enrollments numbers look like this fall because of the new experience that these students have been able to kind of partake of because of the COVID shutdown. It'll be interesting to see. But as we have noted on our show many, many times, is that education is a battleground. And it's my hope and prayer that parents reclaim their central duty and responsibility of educating their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So please get them home, get them in Christian schools, whatever. I hope the coronavirus experience has really opened their eyes to that possibility. Democrats, they're blocking progress at their own peril. There's a helpful article from thehill.com that stated 40% of low-income Americans have lost their jobs. So you think about that, 40% of low-income Americans have lost their jobs. Entire industries are on the verge of collapse, and tens of thousands of small business owners are watching their nest eggs and dreams go up in smoke, including some of my friends in that category. Plus, the collateral damage to Americans is hideous. Millions have foregone medical treatments and checkups. I've had friends in that category also. In addition, Wellbeing Trust, a national public health group, has recently warned that isolation and fear brought on by the virus could lead to increased alcohol or drug abuse, resulting in about 75,000 more deaths. Don't forget what I just quoted here, because I'm going to appear like I'm changing the subject, but I'm not. Bear with me. Hold tight. You might have heard us use this example on the show before, but economist Henry Hazlitt wrote a book as a basic introduction to economics, and the principles found in this book can be applied so many different disciplines and applications and in numerous situations. His book, Economics in One Lesson, should be required curriculum for all high schoolers, politicians, and ignoramuses. The second chapter, or lesson, is labeled The Broken Window. More on that in a minute, but in his first chapter, he ends with this quote: "The art of economics consists in looking not merely at the immediate, but at the longer effects of any act or policy. It consists in tracing the consequences of that policy, not merely for one group, but for all groups." So he encourages us to think about the long-term consequences of our decisions. This means if we take out a loan now to bail out our economy and make sure everyone, you know, has Netflix for the next year, etc., what are the long-term effects or the long-term consequences from taking out that loan now? Let me use Hazlitt's illustration here. Actually, it's Frederick Bastiat, but I digress here. Let's say a bad guy comes and throws a rock through your window and gets away scot-free. He's out of the picture. We're working hard to save up money because you wanted to join Cross Politics Club membership, which you do, which you can do at fightlaughfeast.com. Now, instead of joining the club, you now had to spend money fixing the window. So you pay to get your window fixed. Now, what just happened there? Well, you created a job for a carpenter to fix the window, right? You created a job. That's good for the economy. Jobs are good for the economy. Spending money for other people to work is good for the economy, right? You know, jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, think about this. You originally were going to buy a club membership, which in return creates jobs that cross politic, and at the same time challenged you in your faith and your spiritual walk with the Lord, and now you're excited to engage culture, to teach others, or to run for public office, or become a pastor, or whatever the scenario may be. The list is obviously endless with what you can do joining the club. So instead of taking your hard-earned money to invest in cross politic, you had to repair the window. What's more valuable? What is going to give you a better return on your investment? What is a productive use of your money? Obviously, the alternative scenario is the thief gets caught, he pays for your window, and now you can invest your money in where you think you're going to get the best return on investment with that money. That's the best scenario. But you see, the broken window effect demonstrates so much that is wrong with our politicians and our economy. Our politicians shove shelter in resolutions down our throats, and we don't even consider what are the alternatives or the long-term consequences to our politicians' actions here. The government broke the window, and your liberties are your preferred investment. The government breaks the window, and then here's the catch. You have to spend your money to fix that window. You have to pay back the stimulus loan. You actually take that back. Your children's children have to pay back that stimulus loan. All the while, it is hard to see the downstream effects and ripple effects of the consequences of our government's actions. So pastors, fathers, mothers, children, all listening to this news brief, constantly you should be asking, what are the downstream effects of my own decisions, my personal, my local decisions, of my actions? What are the downstream effects of my actions? Are they lining up with God's will and His word? That is the starting point. And once we understand wisdom and the fear of the Lord, we will begin to see and be far more equipped to see the broken window all around us. There's all sorts of broken windows all around us in our culture, in our political decisions, in our legislation, in our practices, and even in our church. And you see every bill passed by Congress, every city council election, every elder decision, every bill your governor signs has downstream unforeseen consequences. And so it's important that we as Christians cultivate our hearts and minds to have the kind of wisdom and foresight to know that broken windows should not be the normal way we do politics and build societies and build the church. This is Gabriel Wrench with Cross Politic News. Support Rowdy Christian Media and join our club at FightLaughFeast.com. With your partnership, you will get a Fight Laugh Feast t-shirt, discounts to our annual conferences, as I already mentioned, and access to our club portal. Please download our app also. Go to your favorite app store, type in Fight Laugh Feast, download our app, get connected with us on your phone. We hope to see you at our Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through the 3rd. Go to FightLaughFeast.com to find out all these things that you can register for. Have a great day.